Pushkin.
Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do. That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill-building courses for you to choose from because the steps you choose to take today will help you love what you do in the future. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
There are a lot of reasons that I'm excited about today's show. I'm going to tell you three right now. Number one, the show is about this whole dimension of medicine that I essentially didn't know existed, acoustic biomarkers. Basically, using a person's voice to assess their health. Second thing I'm excited about, the show is about the intersection of AI and healthcare. One of my top, say, five intersections. Love that intersection. And three, today's guest, Dr. Yael Bensoussan, gave me what was truly the best excuse that anyone has ever given me for canceling an interview at the last minute.
Yeah, so I'm really sorry for having to cancel on you yesterday.
Totally fine. So what was the surgery you had to do yesterday?
So yesterday we call it airway surgery, where I take a patient to the OR and I have to open up their windpipe or their trachea because there's scar tissue that's blocking them from breathing. So I have to go with a laser and cut the scar tissue out and then take a balloon and open up their windpipe so that they can wake up and breathe better. And that translates to a different sound when they're breathing. So when they're not breathing because of the scar tissue, it can sound like, you know, very noisy breathing. Mm-hmm. We call it the Darth Vader breathing. And then when they wake up from surgery and they're done, they have silent breathing, which means that I know that I did a good job.
I'm Jacob Goldstein, and this is What's Your Problem, the show where I talk to people who are trying to make technological progress. Dr. Yael Bensoussan runs the Health Voice Center at the University of South Florida, and she is also leading a team of researchers that's building a giant database of human voices and breaths and health information. Her problem is this: how do you record the voices of thousands of people without violating patient privacy laws, while building a giant public database that could someday allow your phone to warn you, based solely on your voice, that you may be getting sick? Yael told me that she got into this field in part because she used to be a singer.
So growing up, you know, I always was in a very musical family. I took singing lessons when I was a kid. And then I started singing more professionally around 18 years old. And I had a short but exciting singing career. I wrote pop folk music. We had a band and we toured. We had an album out in 2012. And I mean, it was a lot of fun. And actually, the reason I was able to have that short and exciting career was because I met a speech pathologist when I was 15. So I was taking singing classes. And one day my teacher looked at me and she said, there's something wrong with your voice. Go get checked. And I met a laryngologist who put his camera down and she said, you have nodules on your vocal cords and you might not be able to sing again if you don't take this seriously. And I went to see a speech pathologist. I did rehabilitation with my voice for 6 months and I was able to sing again. And I mean, that's what led me to then become a speech pathologist growing up and then eventually go to med school and then decide to become a laryngologist. So it was kind of all interconnected.
So I know that your research now and most of what I'm really interested to talk with you about is around acoustic biomarkers. So just to start, I mean, what's an acoustic biomarker?
Very good question. So what is a biomarker first? A biomarker is something that indicates the presence of a disease, right? So if you think about a biomarker for cancer, so different cancers have different types of biomarker. For example, for ovarian cancer, we're looking for a specific thing, you know, called CEA in your blood. For different types of cancers, they could take a blood draw and find a specific biomarker. It's an indicator of a disease. An acoustic biomarker is something that can indicate a presence of a disease, but that you can hear. So that's the definition of an acoustic biomarker. So I always say, you know, when you have people in your family that are not well, you will always notice first and you'll say, you don't sound good, right? Or you sound funny. And I have the luxury to know that because I'm a voice doctor. So then people will bring me their family members or people will come saying, I don't know what's wrong with me, but my wife told me to come because my voice is not good. And sometimes it's because their vocal cords are not working. But a lot of times it's because they can have a neurological issue or a cardiac issue that is affecting their voice.
So more broadly, what's going on with AI and acoustic biomarkers?
Yeah, so many exciting things are going on. I think that's the first answer. There are so many startups, so many companies, industry researchers, academic researchers that are working and looking into voice AI. And the reason is it's really cheap to collect, right? If you think about this, if you have a phone, it's really cheap to collect compared
to
a CT scan.
You don't have to take a blood sample.
Exactly.
You got the phone. You've got the device literally
exactly.
In your hand already. All you have to do is talk and you're talking already.
So yeah. It's cheap to collect. That's why pharmaceutical industries are also very interested and there's a lot of pharmaceutical projects around it.
Huh.
So there are a lot of projects that are going on. And the state or the current landscape is that there's tons of people working on very similar things in very interesting and various disease. So I kind of categorize them in three categories of diseases that are being studied. One is the disease that affects the voice box. Okay, so vocal cord paralysis, absolutely, it's intuitive. There's going to be vocal biomarkers in that. Voice box cancer, right? That's easy. Then there's a voice and speech affecting disorders. So disorders that don't affect the voice box, but that have an impact on the voice and the speech. Parkinson is one of them, right? Alzheimer's is one of them. A stroke, somebody having a stroke, they don't have a problem with their voice box, but their speech is going to be altered. So these are voice and speech affecting conditions. So lots of work is being done in that field. And the third one is diseases that you don't think would affect speech, but still people are doing research on that. So there was a really interesting study on diabetes. They're saying that there was a group that published that they could diagnose people that were diabetic versus non-diabetics based on their speech.
And so this third group is one presumably where there's at least the potential for AI to detect differences that even experts like you cannot detect, right? I mean, is that what's going on there?
So AI is not magical, you know, I think it does a lot of things, but what AI does that the layperson doesn't do is that it can analyze a lot more data faster.
Yeah.
Right. So AI has the possibility, if you have a large data set, to then find small differences in these data sets that we don't have. I mean, I would have to listen to, you know, thousands and thousands of voices and compare them statistically.
It might also be able to detect differences that are not even audible.
It could, exactly. I can give it an example. There's a company looking at atrial fibrillation. And I cannot validate their data because that's one of the limitations that we're going to talk about. But obviously their data set is not public. Yeah. But they're saying that they can diagnose atrial fibrillation based on the voice. And their explanation is that our voice vibrates to the sound of our heartbeats.
Big if true, fun if true.
I mean, you know, again, the limitation here is that it's there's a lot of things you can't validate, but they say that they've been validating it with EKGs and that they can see it, they can hear a difference in the voice between patients with AFib.
And to be clear, atrial fibrillation, it puts you at risk for a stroke, right? It can go undiagnosed. So like if this works, that would be very helpful to many people, right?
Absolutely. So
you're mentioning like that's super interesting. It's interesting more generally. So you're building a giant database, right? And I find that interesting for a lot of reasons. It happens. Have you come across the work of Fei-Fei Li?
Absolutely. Yes.
So I talked to Fei-Fei Li for this show not long ago. Wow. Right. She's like nerd
that's
famous,
impressive.
Right?
Yeah. She's pretty cool.
And so, you know, as you know, she built this giant database of images about 10 years ago, a little more now, called ImageNet. And that was that giant database was what allowed these early machine learning models, AI models, to, you know, start recognizing images, right? And so the database was this necessary tool. Necessary thing for the AI to really work, right?
Yep.
And so are you building the acoustic biomarker version of that?
So the short answer is yes, but I'd like to start by saying that I am not building. It's our consortium.
I'll start
by recognizing here that it's a huge team. So we're the Bridge to AI Voice Consortium is a team of 50 investigators across the US and Canada. We're funded by the NIH through the Bridge to AI program. And the goal, absolutely, this is the first time I hear the analogy to the ImageNet database. I like it. I usually give the example of the genomic database, the Human Genome Project.
Oh,
which
the Human Genome Project. More famous than
ImageNet. I mean,
ImageNet.
They're both very famous, but I like this analogy as well.
ImageNet is maybe a little bit closer of an analogy, but maybe less sexy. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, it's interesting because the Genome Project has also very interesting ethical particularities like voice, right? The image has a little bit less of the ethical constraints versus when we talk about whole genome sequencing or genomics data, people kind of understand that voice has similar concerns in terms of privacy.
I want to get to the concerns, but I want to first talk about what you're doing and why
it's
a big deal. And then we can talk about, you know, not doing anything wrong. Yeah. Broadly, if it becomes the thing you hope it will be, what is it going to be? What is the Bridge to AI Voice database going to be?
So it's going to be this large database of thousands of human voices linked to other health information that are going to be available to researchers and potentially people other than researchers as well to be able to make discoveries, right? To learn to use voice AI, to train, you know, the next generation of people on how to learn to build models on voice AI, to help pharmaceutical companies develop products or learn even to how to develop products, right? And the other really important thing is to teach people what type of standards we need, right? Uh-huh. Right now, a lot of different projects, there's really a lack of standards. People collect voice in different ways. That's why it's really hard to pool data together. Uh-huh. So our dream was really to say like, hey, you want to do voice research? Here's a manual, my friend, right? Yeah. Like here is how you collect the voice to make it accurate. This is the protocols with the tasks that we think based on our studies give the best biomarkers, right? These are the type of biomarkers you can look for, and this is the data you can train. So really create a manual of operations also for people to be able to make discoveries, and that's the goal, to have the most impact on patient care.
So what are the biomarkers? What are you asking people to do? What are you collecting?
So I separate things between. So there are respiratory biomarkers, voice biomarkers, speech biomarkers, and linguistics biomarkers. And they're all different. So let's go about why these are different. So respiratory is easy, right? So we ask people to breathe, to cough, to take big breaths in, And that has a lot of information on our pulmonary capacity, on how our windpipe is shaped. Okay, that's respiratory. Then voice and speech, what's the difference? So voice is really the sound that we make when our vocal cords come together. So when we say, like, birds can voice, but they can't speak. If you have a bird that speaks, then you'll be very rich.
Or you have a parrot.
Fine. So when we do voice tasks, we ask patients to say E or ah, or we glide.
I get the difference. Sounds versus words.
And voice biomarkers will be impacted when our voice box is changed or our respiration is changed, right? So somebody with pneumonia probably cannot hold a note for very long. So that's voice biomarkers. When we talk about speech biomarkers, then you go into articulation. So some people, for example, who have neurological deficits or their mouth is not working correctly, they're going to have trouble articulating. They're going to have trouble saying some words. So these are biomarkers we can extract. And then lastly, there's linguistic biomarkers. So what type of words are people using? What type of semantic? How fast do they speak, for example? These are all different types of biomarkers that we can extract. So to give you a very tangible example, I was reading a paper from a group looking at biomarkers of depression, and rate of speech was one of the important biomarkers they found. So people who are sad or depressed will speak at a slower pace. So words per second is smaller. So that's a simple, when you think about it, it's a simple biomarker, right? So that's to give a tangible examples. So in terms of, I think I didn't answer your question fully. So what are we asking patients? So we ask people to do all these tasks. So coughing, breathing, ah, e. Then we make them read those validated passages. And we also ask open questions. And then when we ask open questions, we have to ask about questions that make them emotional. And some that don't make them emotional. Because if you trigger emotion, that causes a bias on how your voice will sound.
What question do you ask to make people emotional?
So it's really interesting. So at first, we would ask, you know, our first question was, you know, can you talk to me about something that makes you sad? It could be somebody that died in your family or, you know, so that was our prompt. And then our question without emotion was, tell us about your disease.
And then, only a doctor would think that's an unemotional question.
Exactly. I mean, but it's like when you think about it, like our consortium is like tons of experts that put their minds together to develop.
Tell me about having Parkinson's. That's the unemotional question we're going to ask.
And then
you.
We like, why are you here? I think it was not that obvious, but it was like, tell us about why you're here to see your doctor today. And then analyzing the data, because we do pilots, right? We audit our data. We realized that people were starting to tear up. Like, we had people crying while talking about why they were coming to the doctor today.
Which is supposed to be the example of unemotional speech.
Correct.
To be
so
clear.
We had to change that in our protocol. Yes.
Interesting. So, okay, this is great. So you're getting a lot of auditory information from every patient. What other information are you getting from each person?
So much. So to give you an idea, our full protocol is about 1 hour.
Okay.
So
of the patient with
an iPad.
Clinician.
So it's an iPad. So everything is based on an iPad, and there is a helper right now, a research assistant. So we collect data. We collect very extensive demographics in terms of, you know, age, race, geographical location. We collect language. So what language do you speak? How many languages do you speak? What languages do you write? You know, what part of the world are you from? That's really important. Then we collect about disabilities. Are you hearing impaired? Are you visually impaired? Because that makes a change in your voice. Your smoking status, your hydration status, your fatigue status, because that, so we kind of thought about anything that could affect voice, right? Your socioeconomical status, because if you think about it, that's going to affect, you know, your linguistics as well. And then, so other than extensive demographics, then we collect confounders. So we think about anything that could change your voice. Do you have allergies? Do you have dental issues? Do you wear braces? So everybody gets a basic test about if they are depressed. So no matter what disease you have, you kind of get the basic tests for all the other disease to measure if it's possible that you have concurrent diseases at the same time.
Because presumably because people are in fact complex and there are many people who have depression and Parkinson's and you want to understand what's going on there.
I mean, most people are complex, yeah, right?
Yeah, right.
It's really rare to have, and people that go to the doctor are not 20-year-old and healthy, right? Most of the people who will use our technology or who will benefit from these databases will be your typical 60-year-old chronic disease patient that comes into the doctor, and they don't have a sterile bill of health.
How many people do you want to have in the database? Like, is there a final number you're going for?
So at the beginning, we were aiming for 30,000. Which is extremely ambitious. I think, to be fair, I mean, if after 4 years we get to 10,000, I think it'll be a huge success.
Okay.
And you know, the data collection, I think what we're learning is that data collection is very resource intensive. To have good data is very resource intensive.
So what happened that made you realize that 30,000 was maybe harder than you thought?
So I think we thought that we wanted to collect as much data as possible. And our original plan was to collect a lot shorter protocols, you know, like shorter clips. But as we started working with patients, we realized that by getting more data from the same patients, we can actually have a lot more information. And it provides a lot of interesting, you know, biomarkers. So we're focusing more on getting more data from a smaller amount of patients and really with the right data, kind of right data with a lot of clinical information attached to it.
After the break, what the world will look like in a few years if everything goes well. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. Okay, 10 seconds. How many things can you name that are always growing? The universe, easy one. My kids, so far. To-do lists. For this month, my sugar snap peas. I know that's not always. I know I'm out of time, but I'm going to give you one more. Businesses on Shopify. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. There are key moments in every endeavor. I ask pretty much everybody I interview on this show about their key moments, their breakthroughs, their failures, their turnarounds, and Shopify can be there for you at all of your key moments. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/problem. Go to shopify.com/problem now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/problem.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G-connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
So this is a big project that Yael and her colleagues are embarked on. It's a 4-year project. They're about a year in. And there will be interim data releases along the way. So I asked her, how long will it take for this project to advance the state of the science in acoustic biomarkers?
Yeah, I would say to say at the end of the 4 years would be probably the best answer. I think at the end of the 4 years. But I think that, you know, you can't just say, oh, we'll just start training models at the end of the 4 year once we have all the data, right? It's not just about, you know, building one model that'll answer your question. It's about continuously training models to understand which biomarkers to extract to then build products that work.
So if things go well, what will this world look like in whatever, 5 years-ish?
So, I mean, there's a few things that this can help with in general, voice biomarkers. Let's not talk about just our project. Diagnosis is one thing, right? Early diagnosis, but that's probably the hardest thing. Screening is more important. So when we think about screening, it means you, let's say you live really far, you don't have access to a doctor, but your doctor has an iPhone and you can talk into the iPhone and it can say, hey, something's wrong. You know, you need a neurological specialist, for example. So to help screen and triage, I think this probably we're looking at in the next 5 years, something definitely possible. The other product that I think will be very possible within 5 years is tracking of diseases. If you want to monitor the evolution of Parkinson or how people respond to drugs, that's why pharmaceutical companies are very interested, right?
So the acoustic biomarker is not just a binary signal of disease, no disease. It can tell you a lot about the status of a disease. Is it getting better? Is it getting worse?
Evolution, especially if you train it on your own voice, right? It's even easier to detect changes in somebody's voice as they progress, like your Siri, for example, or Alexa that listens to your voice. So that's going to be a really good tool for pharmaceutical companies. That's why they're investing in it, right? To see how you respond to a drug, how you respond to a treatment. And when you think about telehealth at home, right? So more and more, we're going to talk about remote monitoring people. There were just too many people on this earth to all be in hospitals when we're sick.
Well, and if you can stay out of the hospital when you're sick, that's better, right? You don't want to go to the hospital unless you
absolutely
have to.
Yeah. Or that your Alexa detects when your voice starts deteriorating and sends you a nurse before you need to go to the hospital.
So there's a more general version of that one, right, that you could imagine, which is you get your whatever, your iPhone, your Android phone, and you have a choice when you're setting up your phone, like, do you want to opt in to the phone listening and to tell you if you need to go talk to your doctor, right? Just like a very broad-based thing that you could opt into. Like, I would probably opt into that. I mean, is that a thing that you think about?
So, I mean, yes, I'm sure that, you know, Apple is working on that already. They are. the question is, there has to be technology that's being developed as well to ensure privacy of not only you, but your environment, right? Because when it's your phone, then it's your environment as well.
So you brought up privacy in that context. We can knock out privacy in the context of the database as well here. How could it go wrong building a database of thousands of people's voices with tons of data about them? Answers itself.
But, yeah, it can go wrong in many ways. Yeah. And I just came out of like 2 hours of meetings of this. So at the Bridge to AI program, we have a huge group of bioethicists. And one of our big aim as a group is really to ensure patient privacy and to answer these questions of how do we protect patient privacy in the context of open data, right? So you are absolutely right. Tons of things can go wrong. People can be potentially re-identified through their voice. Mm-hmm. So one of our biggest goals this year is determine what part of the voice is identifiable and which part is not, okay? Huh. And all of this is based on the HIPAA law. HIPAA law is from the 1990s.
HIPAA law is the law that governs sharing and security of people's medical information.
Correct. Yeah. Protected health information, PHI, we call that. And that law was made in the 1990s, right? And back then, they listed a list of things of what they called PHI or identifiers that cannot be shared openly and that should stay in the hospital. And voice prints are listed. But when you go into what a definition of a voice print is, it's very nebulous. It's, you know, we don't know. So because of that nebularity,
nebulosity.
Yes. I'm French.
I don't know. No.
Yeah, and
those are words.
Because it's so nebulous. A lot of institutions, a lot of hospitals will say, well, you know, voice is not a is not an identifier as long as you don't say, hi, I'm John Doe and I live at 425, blah, blah, blah. Other universities will say, no, 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 voice is always an identifier.
Right.
You can never release voice data. So what our group is doing right now is really looking at why the HIPAA law says this, what are the actual legal implications of sharing voice, and we always grade it in terms of risk, right? If I talked about all the things that we collect, you can think that the respiratory sounds are probably very safe to share.
Right.
Versus a speech sample, as we say, free speech.
Yeah.
It's probably the most identifying if you have to grade it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're kind of looking at, well, where is the balance? How much can we release? And also we can transform the data. So for example, we can change the data, the audio data, in what we call visual spectrograms.
Like a waveform?
Yeah, it's a sort of waveform that machine learning can use. We can extract acoustic features, right? Like loudness, frequency, stuff like that.
And so are you basically trying to figure out how to make a person be not identifiable based on their voice without messing up the database? Like, that's the balance, right? Like,
correct.
If you monkey with their voice too much, then you're monkeying with the data in the database that we care the most about. Like, that seems like a hard trade-off. So if we go farther out into the future, you solve all these problems, you build your giant database, the models get really good. All of these things seem like things that may well happen. I'm curious about, you know, AI doing some chunk of what you do now, right? We see this happening, say, in radiology already. AI is clearly very good at doing some of the technical work that radiologists do in diagnosing scans of patients, right? How do you think about the future of AI, you know, using acoustic biomarkers to make diagnosis in a way that is similar to what you do now as a human being?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think I'm going to lose my job yet, because I would say that my primary goal as a doctor is not to necessarily do that, right? Like, my primary goal is, yes, to diagnose, but it's to treat patients. So for now, AI is not going to treat the patient. So I think what it's going to do is it's going to support a lot of the workforce. So for example, I'm academic laryngologist. I'm a super specialist, right? For people to get to me, they often see like five different doctors.
So instead of going through four specialists who can't figure it out, you go to your primary care doctor, or even you just talk to your phone and your phone says you better talk to your primary care doctor, and your primary care doctor sends the patient directly to you.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Right. To say like, hey, because again, most of what we do for a very long time will need a gold standard, right? Diagnosis. So often, you know, it's a biopsy or it's an imaging. You need a gold standard.
The acoustic biomarker is not a clear enough diagnostic technique. You need something more reliable. Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to, you know, no doctor will say, oh, well, based on this, this is your diagnosis, start chemotherapy. That's not where we're going.
Yeah.
I wouldn't take chemotherapy based on an acoustic biomarker.
Sure.
But it's hopefully going to support a lot of primary care and access to care to get to the right person faster.
Great. Anything else we should talk about?
The one thing we didn't talk about, I guess, I talk about this all day, so sometimes it's hard to remember what I've said and what I haven't said. But the implication for probably all this new telehealth, you know, online world that we live in, a lot of industries are already integrating tools So for example, Canary Speech is a startup that sold a product. I think they're working with Teams to capture if there's signs in your voice of depression.
Teams meaning Microsoft Teams, uh-huh. like Microsoft's Teams. Version of Zoom. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, and, okay. and don't quote me on the particular, maybe I'm, you know, I'm not giving, but I know there's a few startups that are starting to integrate products in Zoom or in Teams to let employers know that, hey, your employee is not doing well based on his voice, for example. Huh. Right.
And what is your view of the efficacy of those?
So, I mean, I the quick answer is it probably works partially.
Yeah.
But the question is not if it works fully or not. The question is, does it make a difference? Right. So let's yeah. say, let's
I mean,
say,
does it do what they say it does is a question that matters to me. Right. Like, does it, are the claims valid? Seems like a reasonable starting point.
Yeah, I think so. So I just reviewed an article of one of the startups that's fantastic, that's looking at like depression. And I mean, their numbers look great. I do think that the results that a lot of these projects are getting are definitely positive and promising. Absolutely.
We'll be back in a minute with the lightning round. You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life. What are you doing now to help you get there? There are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP. That dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events. So it's safe to say it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend.
The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. The PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with AI coaching tools and 5G connected cameras. AAA is getting more drivers back on the road fast with location telematics. And the Las Vegas Grand Prix is powering race day operations with 5G connectivity, giving fans an experience at the speed they deserve. This is accelerating innovation with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. Now, as promised, we're back with the lightning round. What was your band called?
My stage name was Ella Benz.
Ella Benz.
Because my last name is Bensusan, so that was too long.
And Yael became Ella.
Yeah, because no one could say my first name.
did you have a hit song?
In French.
What was it called?
I wouldn't call it a hit song. It was called Un aller simple, means I guess in English, it's like a one-way flight.
Can you sing a line?
No, that's my previous life.
Can you just say a line?
Yeah, it was It's in French, though.
I know. It'll sound great. Say it in French.
Yeah. En aller simple à l'autre bout du monde, j'espère qu'il y a du bonheur au quotidien. Means get me a one-way flight for the other side of the world. I hope people are really happy there.
Well, you're here now. You're in Tampa now. Did it work out as hoped?
Oh yeah, I mean, I have the best job in the world. You know, I get to, my mom raised us, me and my brother, saying, "You guys need two jobs: one that makes money, and the other one that makes you really happy. And if you manage to have both in one job, then you'll have made it." You know, and I get to be a surgeon and work with voice and voice professional. And you know, it's been my passion pretty much all my life. So, yeah.
Do you work with professional singers as a physician?
Absolutely. I mean, I love treating my professional singers. So, yeah, I love that part of my job.
Have you treated anybody famous?
Yes, but I can't tell.
What's Taylor Swift really like?
Oh, that I don't know. I wish. No. But she sounds fine, though. She probably doesn't need a laryngologist.
What's the best cure for a sore throat?
Voice rest and Advil. It takes the inflammation away.
Uh-huh. Advil, just ibuprofen. And don't talk.
And voice rest, yes.
Yeah, okay. Are you just always involuntarily diagnosing people based on their voice?
All the time.
Okay.
So funny, fun fact. 2 months ago, my girlfriend from residency called me. I hadn't spoken to her in like a year and a half. And she called me and she said, "Hi." And I said, "You're pregnant."
Really?
And I could hear it because pregnancy gives you like this, you know, you get stuffy in a certain way in your nose. Like we call it rhinitis of pregnancy. And I knew her voice very well. She was my girlfriend for a long time. You know, we studied together and I knew it, you know, I think she says, "Hey, how are you? I wanted to talk to you." And I'm like, "You're pregnant." And she's like, "How did you know?" So yes.
That's amazing.
I was listening to the political debates, you know, and I'm like, "Ooh, this guy needs a laryngologist." I'm diagnosing people all the time. Huh.
Yeah. Well, they should give you a call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Lovely to talk with you.
This was one of the funnest interviews I've done.
Yael Bensusan runs the Health Voice Center at the University of South Florida. She's also a principal investigator on the Bridge to AI Voice project.
Today's show was produced by Gabriel Hunter Chang, edited by Lydia Jean Cott, and engineered by Sarah Bouguer. Just a quick note, we're going to be taking a break for the next couple of weeks, but we will have an episode in our feed next week from our colleagues over at the Happiness Lab that is timed, not coincidentally, to World Happiness Day, which I'm informed is on March 20th. I'm Jacob Goldstein, and we'll be back soon with more episodes of What's Your Problem?
How do you create present and future value? As a leading provider of specialized finance, operations, and technology advisory services for Fortune 500 companies, emerging growth market leaders, and private equity sponsors, Cross Country Consulting solves today's most pressing challenges and creates present and future enterprise value. With tailored integrated solutions for accounting, risk, technology-enabled transformation, and transaction solutions, Cross Country works as a strategic partner and collaborative part of your team. The future-ready business, insight and within reach. Go to crosscountry-consulting.com to learn more.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.